Okay, everybody, workday's over.
This is the best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Ovius and Giglio.
NHL free agency is underway. The Carolina Hurricanes have been active. Well, because they've had to be active. They didn't have any goalies, really, going into today. So what were they going to do? I thought, Giglio, that was the focal point of today. There's other players, obviously, we're going to talk about here in a second. But the biggest thing was, if you feel that you're in a window to win, who you have in net is kind of important. And they made the decision to not believe in Alex Nedeljkovic. They traded him to Detroit. It looks like they also didn't believe in Peter Mrazek, who signed elsewhere. So instead, to replace Alex, the tandem of Alex Nedeljkovic and Peter Mrazek, the Hurricanes went and signed Frederik Andersen and Antti Raanta to play in net. Now, Frederik Andersen is the guy that's going to be making the most amount of money. I believe it's about $4.5 million for Andersen. Fun fact about Andersen, he was actually drafted by the Carolina Hurricanes back in 2010. But he and Jim Rutherford, the previous general manager of the Carolina Hurricanes, didn't see eye to eye. So he never played for the Canes. Actually went back in the draft and went to the Ducks.
Sometimes you have to say things aloud just to hear how ridiculous they are.
Yeah.
Here are the Hurricanes. We have an open window to win the Stanley Cup. Here's an idea. Let's sign the Leafs goalie.
Yes.
Because yes. Toronto's had such great success in the postseason since 1960 never.
Not only do they sign the Leafs goalie, who they have wonderful playoff experience, they sign the Leafs goalie who the last two seasons has seen a downturn in production. He's had his moments, but the last two seasons, if you look at the statistics, haven't exactly been stellar.
I'm more inclined to have a belief in Raanta, who's played on a bad team. I can buy some of that argument. Hey, his numbers aren't great, but he hasn't played with a good defense.
The other issue, though, with Raanta, though, is that he's been hurt,
injuries,
too.
Yeah.
So you're banking on the fact that he's not going to have another injury-plagued season like he did last year. So the goalie situation for the Carolina Hurricanes breaks down like this. They're spending the same amount of money they probably would have spent on Peter Mrazek and Alex Nedeljkovic. But clearly they felt that Alex Nedeljkovic at, I don't know, $2.5-3 million was not the value they were looking at. They did not believe in Alex Nedeljkovic. They believed that his AHL production was more of what to expect out of him rather than what we saw throughout most of last season outside of some shaky play in the playoffs.
It's a net zero from what they went into last year as well, financially.
Yes.
Salary cap-wise. They paid Reimer and Mrazek 6.5 between the two of them. Raanta and Andersen will be 6.5 between the two of them. So, again, I don't have any issue with the Hurricanes and their decisions that they've made where they say, hey, our goal is to win the Stanley Cup. That is our entire focus. That's the only thing we care about. And if they looked at last year's playoffs and said, Dougie Hamilton wasn't very good in the playoffs, we're going to spend the money on Dougie Hamilton elsewhere. No issue with that. If they looked at Alex Nedeljkovic and said he gave up a bunch of soft goals that cost us games and we don't think we can win the cup with him, I don't have a problem with that either. Now, things I potentially will have a problem with, and we'll see how this plays out with Tony DeAngelo, because clearly they signed Tony DeAngelo from the New York Rangers because of his power play statistics to offset the loss or to help offset the loss of Dougie Hamilton and his power play production. The things the Hurricanes know more than I do, Don Waddell, Rod Brendamore, everyone who's employed by the Hurricanes knows more about hockey than I do.
Yeah.
But I know more about this market than the Hurricanes, than Tom Dundon.
Yes.
Than pretty much everybody not named Rod Brendamore and Mike Sondheim with the Hurricanes. Okay? I know more about people than a lot of the decisions the Hurricanes are making right now. And I'm not sure they understand. Now, they might say, we are Bill Belichick. We are the Patriots.
Yeah, they believe in their room.
We're getting DeAngelo at a value.
the sixth chance that Tony D'Angelo is getting is a chance with us, which is what he didn't have before, and we'll make it work.
Well, we're the ones who are going to fix him.
We're the ones that are going to fix him.
That's the God complex every coach, GM, you name it,
yes,
has.
Yes, the Canes are not unique in this situation. We can buy the marketing what the Carolina Hurricanes have put forth in terms of inclusivity, pride nights, hockey is for everyone. We can buy the marketing, and they've made a lot of fans through that marketing, but ultimately, they're no different than any other sports team out there. Is there a guy that we can take a risk on, low risk in terms of finances, and ultimately the belief is, well, if it doesn't work out, we scuttle the dude, we go back to what we typically do, and people will forgive us. Most of the time, that is true, but I will say, because winning will cure everything. Winning always cures everything in this business. However, I don't think we should diminish the belief that people had put into this team that they were different, because you made a lot of fans that way. You made yourself different. You gave fans a reason to wrap their arms around you. And what you did is you took those marketing efforts that really made loyal fans out of your franchise and just said, yeah, well, never mind. Yeah, the images that we put up with pride and the hockey is for everyone and all that stuff. Oh, and Ethan Bear, who they acquired today from Edmonton, a guy who's had to deal with racist abuse, okay? Yeah, all those things? Yeah, well, you see, what had happened was Tony D'Angelo's $1 million, and if he produces on the power, I mean, you got to remember, this guy produces, and he's only $1 million. I mean, what do you expect out of a guy who made his money off of subprime auto loans?
Right.
Like, it's about finding the inefficiencies in the market, capitalizing them, and getting your return on investment. If this hits with Tony D'Angelo, if he is incident-free and they get through the year.
It's 1 year.
It's a one-year deal for $1 million. If he produces and there are no incidents on the ice or off the ice, it validates their belief in the room. It validates Tom Dundon's belief that we can be the great disruptors. We can see things that other people cannot. However, I don't believe we'll go incident-free throughout the season because Tony D'Angelo, who was with the New York Rangers, has a list of things that have gone wrong, going all the way back to his junior hockey days in the Ontario Hockey League. D'Angelo was twice suspended for violating the league's harassment, abuse, and diversity policy, at least once after an unspecified slur was used with a teammate. He was also suspended once in juniors and again with the Arizona Coyotes for abuse of an official. Then there's the matter of last year in New York, where the Rangers said, oh, yes, we've given you belief. We've given you these contracts. We've given you multiple chances. And then he got into a fight with the goalie. And they put the dude on waivers, he cleared, and they put him on the taxi squad. He was done. They were willing to justify a bunch of other things, but they finally saw the straw that broke the back, right? And this is, again, specific to the room, all right? I'm not even getting into Tony D'Angelo's off-the-ice antics. I don't care about his social media. I don't care that he went to Parler. I don't care that he doesn't believe in COVID-19. Hey, man, you're a dime a dozen in that regard. I mean, at this point in 2021, with all the things that we've dealt with, you ain't getting through to people on certain topics. Straight up, all right? So all that stuff does not bother me in the least. What bothers me in this move is twofold. What I just laid out, the Canes as an organization had positioned themselves as a group that was inclusive, and they go and they add somebody who is very much the antithesis of what they have marketed themselves as. And it hurts a lot of fans to see a team that they believed was different is not. Now, the other thing that I'm concerned with is you could deal with Eric Halla, right? Remember Eric Halla? He's with the Nashville Predators.
Vaguely. Yeah.
Right. You look, this was a guy who didn't exactly get in with the culture, and eventually he was on his way out, and there was no love lost there and things like that. That's fine. Whatever. This one's different. This is a little bit different. This is a guy who's going to cost you on the ice if he doesn't keep his head, you know, about him. He's going to cost you on the ice. I mean, this is a guy who has slammed people into the boards and things like that. So, you think you can get to him? All right, man. Good luck. And quotes like this from Don Waddell are more than likely going to backfire if he does not keep his cool. This is what Don Waddell, president and general manager of the Carolina Hurricanes, said on the signing of Tony D'Angelo. Quote, Tony is a smooth-skating, puck-moving defenseman. We've done a lot of background work on this player, and we're confident that he can be a positive addition to our group. Now, he's got the co-signing of like a Staal brother. There is the belief in the room that we can change these guys. But guess what? I've heard it all before. This is classic players looking out for other players. If you're talented, there are more than enough opportunities for you. If you're not, well, you know, just a bad apple and we just had to get rid of you. But you notice how the bad apples keep showing up if they got talent? And that's the case with Tony D'Angelo. And that's where the Carolina Hurricanes are. But brilliant on them, because this is like a buried story. I mean, they had so many things they had to fix in this offseason, and a lot of new names to get used to, like the new goalies, some new defensemen. They got some new fourth liners because guys like Morgan Geeky, Warren Fogle, Brock McGinn, they're gone, right?
Yeah, Brock signed with Pittsburgh today.
And I'm okay.
Years, almost $3 million.
Yeah, and I'm actually like good for Brock McGinn, but I can see why the Canes did not want to pay Brock McGinn that amount of money. He's a fan favorite. He clearly creates a lot of chances, but I can understand why they did not want to pay that guy that amount of money. The surprise is that Jordan Martinook actually signed with the Carolina Hurricanes today. I thought he was good as gone, considering what he possibly could have made somewhere else. But he likes being here, and maybe he's a guy that can actually help with the room. But that's what the Carolina Hurricanes have done today with free agency. Some moves that obviously needed to be done, and then some moves that didn't really need to be done. In the case of Tony D'Angelo, really unnecessary. Carolina Hurricanes are in the midst of free agency. A lot of question marks with their plan. Who's going to be goalie, right? What are they going to do to replace Dougie Hamilton's production? Looks like we got some potential answers here. To help us talk about that, Sarah Sivian of The Athletic covers the Carolina Hurricanes. Siv, what's up?
Oh, nothing. Slow news day. What's up with you guys?
Yeah, I feel for our friends in the Canes social media department right now, but we'll get to that in a second. Yeah. Let's actually start with goalie. And okay. We understand that the Canes did not believe in Alex Nedeljkovic. Got it. That's been covered. I don't really feel like going over that stuff. I wish fans would understand what was going on in that situation. So they're moving on from Alex Nedeljkovic. I'm a little surprised they did not continue to stick with Peter Mrazek, because I guess if I'm looking at the financial math, by going out and getting Freddie Anderson from Toronto and Antti Raanta, it's about the same amount of money for the tandem. But the question is, are they going to get more production out of these two guys?
That is a gigantic question. I feel like there's so much room for error, because Raanta, when he's fully healthy, is one of the best goalies in the league, absolutely. But emphasis on when he's fully healthy, and hence the cheap contract, right? And then Anderson, how do you even discuss the Toronto Maple Leafs? I'm going to walk into this giving him the benefit of the doubt. I think he's a good goalie. I don't think his numbers have been trending in the best direction, but I think you should see what happens before judging that. And they just got to both stay healthy, but how can one predict that? You just can't. So it's tough to say.
Sarah Sivian from The Athletic joining us here on the OG. That's Joe Ovius. I'm Joe Giglio. All right, Sarah, so by Dougie Hamilton signing with New Jersey, and he ends up signing for $8.5 million average per year, where does that money go now? Because I'm seeing Ian Cole at $2.9 million, Tony D'Angelo $1 million. Is this to make room for Svech's new contract?
Yeah.
Okay.
Svechnikov, and I guess room for error a little bit. I mean, as they stand, if I factor in Svechnikov, probably what, $8 million, it's going to be around $4 million over the cap. Maybe a few more surprise signings. Who knows? But yeah, I guess that's where that money is going to.
Sarah Sivian of The Athletic joining us. I assume that's why Jordan Martinook stuck around. I mean, they have to have somebody. If they're going to sign Svechnikov to something big, you got to keep Martinook there to do the thing, right?
Well, that, and they were trying to make a move for Brock McGinn, but he's just kind of a little too pricey for the fourth line needs when you kind of have a team with more talent up front, you know?
Yeah, it's the fourth line. You mentioned Brock McGinn, who ends up signing with the Pittsburgh Penguins. I think that's one of those situations where people like the player, But at the price, I can understand why. Like, that's one of those easy decisions for a team of, look, man, best of luck to you. Go get your money. But that's just a little too pricey for us. And who knows? Maybe a change of pace for McGinn will actually produce some more points. Sarah Sevian of The Athletic joining us here on the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovias. All right, so Giglio mentioned Tony DeAngelo. And this was something that I know that Adam Gold had floated, like 2 weeks ago or something like that in a column. They got a lot
of my boy Adam is right once again. He doesn't get enough respect around here. That's all I'll say about that.
Give Adam his flowers while he's on vacation.
Yes.
So Gold floated this out a while back, and obviously the reaction to this was not good on social media. And I understand why, given Tony DeAngelo's background and how he left New York. My question is, because I know you get a sense of the room, you get a sense of Rod Brindamore. Do they really believe that, like, the sixth chance for Tony DeAngelo is going to pay off here?
Yeah, that's the question of the hour, and is it worth the risk? I feel like a lot of the Canes' philosophy is kind of, we don't care what people think about us, and that's all well and good when you're trading away Nedeljkovic and bringing in somebody else or kind of making these moves that don't appear to make sense on the surface, but right now, if the most generous explanation for signing Tony DeAngelo is that they're cheap because it was $1 million. And yeah, on the ice, he does have some potential, but it doesn't look good to me. And I have a lot of questions that I have not received answers to yet. So I can't answer that.
Yeah. So like Don Waddell, the president and general manager of the Carolina Hurricanes, in the statement on the Tony DeAngelo signing says something about what was it? I had the email in front of me, but it's like, we did our background on this. Mm-hmm. I mean, what kind of background did you do? I mean, we know what happened at the junior level. We know what happened with his exit in New York.
Well, they have two former teammates. They have two Rangers teammates on the roster. Then you have the Stahl brother who vouched for him in this famous New York Post article.
But see, maybe this is me being cynical, and I've been doing this for a long time. I get players are always going to vouch for other players. At the end,
maybe publicly, but I don't know if they would behind the scenes.
At the end of the day, I always get the sense that players would like the benefit of the doubt given to them, so they give benefit to the doubts to other people.
And that's fair.
And
publicly, I think.
And they also always have the belief that our room is different, so therefore we can absorb those types of things. I mean, the Canes are not the first organization to believe that their room is different.
They're the ones who could fix them.
Yeah. I mean, come on. This is a tale as old as time in sports. So
what is this, Mr. Rogers, though? Like, who's fixing? Why do, like, they need to invest so much time and energy into fixing an apparently $1 million player?
Right. And this is where you and I are in agreement here, and that's why I think it's specific to Don Waddell. What kind of background are we talking about here? I mean, let's
great question I asked. I don't have an answer yet. That says a lot.
Let's strip away the social media stuff, right?
Yeah.
To me, it's the on-ice stuff. You want to bring a hothead in. That's what you want to do. As though he hasn't given you multiple instances to show you that he's going to have an incident at some point in time that's going to cost you. I mean, the Canes...
There's a mural adjacent to the Hurricanes locker room that shows Tony getting dragged by Sebastian Aho.
Right.
Like, we've seen that.
We've seen this. He was part of your marketing efforts. And then the other thing that I would point out, I mean, this was apparently a room that could not deal with Eric Halla, right? Like, this guy just didn't get it. They had to get him out of there. We saw the feistiness between the two teams in the playoffs. That's just
great
Eric
point.
Halla. No offense to Eric Halla. That's just Eric Halla. Now we got a guy who's even more of a hothead. I don't understand this at all.
Yeah, even when I know people will try to, it's politically charged, and there's instances of his Twitter or whatever. Take that all away, and there's still multiple concerns. There's abuse of officials. There's kind of losing your temper and making hot-headed bad plays. There's kind of snapping in general, right? I want to hear how the extent of the investigation into the altercation with the Rangers was.
Yeah.
I want to hear about that. I want to hear what he has specifically done. Not he's promising to be better, because he said that. And three other NHL franchises, and that's even after two incidences in the OHL. I want to know what he's doing to control his anger and what the extent of the investigation into him was. That's what we have to know.
Plus, I would also love to hear from Ethan Bear, who they just acquired from Edmonton, who has had to deal with his own racist abuse. And here's a guy who, getting back into the juniors levels, has dealt with incidents. So I just, it's a very interesting move, but it's just a reminder that if you can, if you've got talent and there's a belief that you can produce and you come at a bargain, we'll make all sorts of concessions to make that happen. So we shall see. So before we say goodbye to Sarah Sivian of The Athletic, so this Svechnikov deal, getting back to that, are we just going to have to continue to wait on this one? Like, what do we got on a timeline on this thing? They got money, obviously. What are we waiting for?
Yep. I guess we're just going to have to wait. I don't know. I'm still waiting on an answer from the Canes about various things. So I actually don't for once have info about this yet. I mean, I'm sure it'll get done if, like, they obviously let Dougie walk. They got to use the money somewhere, and that's what they would use it on, clearly, but I don't know when. I don't think they're in a rush, as John said.
Fair enough. Sarah Sivian, The Athletic, we appreciate it. Talk to you later.
All right, thanks.
It's got to the country where Wes Durham is hanging out, ACC Network. Wes, what's up, man?
What's happening? How you guys doing? A week ago, we had... It was all calm and everything was good, wasn't it?
Last week, Wes, you were dismissive.
I was dismissive, and I will continue to be dismissive until I know the playoff outcome.
Ah, okay. I'm glad we're going to go there. So, for context purposes, Wes Durham dropped by while we were at ACC kickoff when he got done with his, I believe, 72 hours of coverage.
We got everybody but Jerry Lewis and Ed McMahon.
I mean, it's impressive, man. You're a machine.
Yeah, thanks.
An absolute machine.
Yeah.
So you sat down with us, and the news was coming out that Texas and Oklahoma were getting ready to leave the Big 12 to join the SEC. And a week later, they've sent the letter. Things seem to be in motion for 2025.
Sure.
But as we've taken a step back, I know Gillio and I have talked about this. As we've
Gillio used the term Kaiser Sosa.
He did. He did earlier this week,
which I loved.
As we take a step back, it recontextualizes the college football playoff expansion structure and what Greg Sankey of the SEC was pushing for, what Jack Swarbrick of Notre Dame was pushing for. And I know that Nicole Auerbach and Stuart Mandel of The Athletic reported on this earlier today, including comments from the new Pac-12 commissioner.
Right.
The college football playoff expansion isn't a done deal. It's simply
Correct.
Going through the process. So do you think that other people within college sports will actually try to derail this because of what happened with the SEC?
Well, there are two things about this. Number one, you had Jack Swarbrick, Greg Sankey, Craig Thompson of the Mountain West in the room with Bob Bowlesby in the working group that decided this proposal.
Yeah.
And then you have Greg Sankey pull the et tu, Brute on him. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would understand, and I think George got put up the, and I can't pronounce his last name, the new commissioner of the Pac-12. I just know him as George in my head.
Yeah.
George comes out and says, well, I want to know more about that room. Well, remember, he's from Vegas, and he's from the gambling and entertainment side of the house. He really doesn't care about all this collegial attitude that everybody's shown the last 18 months, right?
Right.
So he can say that and essentially get away with it. The other part about this is there seems to be some real – remember, we have the college football playoff committee. We have the management committee, right, which is the presidents and chancellors and all these other folks. That's the group this has to get through. And you don't know how they're going to act because they're all, and I'm not dismissing it, but they're all academic people, right? They're leaders and CEOs of institutions within the college football playoff. So you can throw 12 out there and they may say, nah, you know what? We didn't like the way you got to this, so we're going to go back to 4 and finish the contract. So we'll see. At the end of the day, I think Oklahoma and Texas end up in the SEC. But I think it has done some real damage to the trust among the commissioners, and it has probably done some damage within the walls of that league for sure, I think, as it relates to the athletic directors who helped us all play football last year, guys. In any league, take your pick, ACC, SEC, Big 12, Pac-12, Big 10. We all played some structure of football last year because we all had cooperation and understood there was a common goal, right? It got there a little later in the Big Ten and the SEC and maybe in the Pac-12, but the ACC and SEC really worked in harmony together to get this done. I got to believe that the athletic director conversation in the SEC is going to be a little troubling because Ross Bjork wasn't involved in any of this.
Yeah.
And think about the trust level that had to go into college athletics in the last year just to get through it.
Well,
how
actually,
much of that, how much of that have we lost?
I would argue you go back to the pandemic, the trust level was already gone. I mean, remember the whole we're all in this together, and next thing you know, everybody went rogue.
Well, Kevin Warren was influenced, but Kevin Warren's situation was, I think I told you guys this, Kevin Warren was just the punching bag for the Big Ten presidents who had put up with 30 years of Jim Delaney.
Yes.
That's what that was. They figured, well, we got this guy. We'll railroad him into we're not going to play. And then all of a sudden, Kevin Warren stood up there and delivered the goods and, you know, tried to stand by it. And the next thing you know, the presidents went and hid in the cracks and walls and crevices to allow the ADs then to go back to work and put it together again. So that aside, but I think you're right. I think we all had people that were crumbling. And, you know, we had votes in the ACC, I'm sure, that weren't unanimous, that were presented as unanimous. And that's fine, too. The funniest thing on the planet is going to be when Oklahoma and Texas are approved and Sankey stands up there and tells you it's unanimous. Because I feel confident, Gilio, it will not be unanimous.
Yeah, West Durham, ACC Network, joining us here on the OG. That's Jovius. I'm Joe Gilio. And Wes, yeah, Texas A&M, of course, is not going to vote for Texas's addition to the SEC.
No.
Which, mind you, is how we all got here. Because little brother Texas A&M went out on its own and made good, and Texas is sitting over here in the corner going, now, wait a second. You're not supposed to have nice things.
Right.
But back to your point about George Kliavkoff.
Kliavkoff? Kliavkoff.
Sure, yeah.
The new Pac-12 commissioner and his questioning.
He doesn't play for that Russian Olympic committee, does he?
I don't think so, but
okay.
His questioning of this four-person subcommittee was the same questions that I had, but I'd like to take it a step further. And you may have some inside information on this. Because we come to find out that this subcommittee of four people was formed 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there was a pretense that the ACC allowed Jack Swarbrick to be on this committee thinking that he somehow was representing the ACC and or had the ACC interests at heart?
I don't know that.
Okay.
In fact, that didn't strike. And to be honest with you, when I saw the post, the video post from yesterday's show, I guess where you asked that question, I don't know that I would have thought that until you mentioned it.
Okay.
So let me say that at least on the surface, I wouldn't have thought he had the ACC's endorsement. Jack Swarbrick would be a friend of the conference. I wouldn't say he is a member of the conference when that discussion takes place. But however, I think we all can agree that Swarbrick and Sankey were two of the forward-thinking people in college football. Okay? We would have regarded, let's say we had a list of eight people that we would want to determine the future of college football. Somehow I think we would put both those guys on that list, along with some other people. Fair?
Agree. I would not put them in a four-person committee together without any kind of ACC, Big Ten, or Pac-12 representation.
Well, and let me take that a step further. I had somebody say to me last Friday night, long after I'd gotten back from Charlotte, boy, I bet Greg Sankey was walking around on nails last week when the note came out on Wednesday because he would have liked to have had that come out in October.
Oh, that Texas and Oklahoma we're going to join.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why October?
Yeah, because in September, the 12-team playoff gets approved and nobody thinks anything of it.
Yeah.
And in October, it comes out.
Yeah.
Well, it comes out. Yeah, now that it comes out now, I mean, I do not particularly possess a special insight to be able to connect two dots that are literally next to each other.
I think the rest
of them did, too.
Just like it doesn't take that long to figure out who was the one that was leaking it, that this was happening. Texas A&M.
Right.
I mean, because Texas A&M does not want Texas in the SEC.
Well, they don't want Texas in the ACC, in the SEC, and I'm not sure Arkansas and Missouri are crazy about it either, because now Missouri's in witness protection anyway.
Yeah, yeah. It was not lost on me that the story originated with a Texas A&M writer in Houston.
Correct. The other aspect about this, and here's the one that also gets you, and I'll go back to the room of ADs and the room of presidents. How in the world does Ross Bjork or the president of A&M walk into those meetings now knowing that Sankey and others in the Southeastern Conference we're going into a corner room on the other side of the mm-hmm. hotel to discuss Oklahoma and Texas without A&M.
Well, I'm sure that the SEC attitude towards Texas A&M is, you like this money? All right, cool. Then you can just deal with it right now. Because it's not like they're not going to go anywhere now.
Okay, but remember, okay, let me hit this close to home.
Okay.
Let me hit this back to the house.
Yeah.
You guys remember the 48-7, Gilio does, I'm sure you do too, Joe, 48-72 hours where NC State was looped in with Clemson and Florida State to the Southeastern Conference?
Yeah, and I never bought that, but yeah, go on.
Okay, but it doesn't matter if
you
bought
it. Yeah, I got you.
Okay, I'm taking that literal hypothesis.
Sure.
And the same one that Georgia Tech, Carolina, and Virginia to the Big Ten for 72 hours, and by the way, that was real.
That was real, yes.
That was real. But I would say this. If NC State, let's say NC State was going to the Southeastern Conference, or no, let's say Carolina was NC State goes to the Southeastern Conference, and 5 years later, they're having a discussion with Carolina about coming to the Southeastern Conference.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not going to tell Boo Corrigan or Randy Woodson.
Yeah.
And in fact, they're not going to let them know about it until the reporter breaks it.
Yeah, no, I would be upset if I was
that's
NC State.
That's Texas and Texas A&M at this point.
Yes.
And everyone.
That's where this is.
You know, though, in that scenario, everyone at NC State would say that would be par for the course, though, because we know who pulls
well,
the strings
sure.
yes.
traditionally
and
in
that's
this conference.
And let me tell you something. That's why, and I said this on the show Monday, I guess, maybe Tuesday. That's why at one of the last Big 12 meetings that included Missouri, before the announcement came down that they were going to the SEC with Texas A&M, that's why Mike Alden sat at the opposite end of a conference table, and I'm talking like a 24-foot one. He was at one end with three people. DeLoss Dodds was the AD at Texas at the other end with like five others around him. And there were I've been told there were nine empty chairs in between them.
That's great.
Five on one side and four on the other. And that's the way the meeting was conducted.
I love.
You think Texas A&M is just going to stand idly by? There's no
chance. Well, I mean, they can
chance.
Not that they're going to stand
that's,
idly
that's
by.
That's just the Jesse Helms vote at this point.
At this point, man, yeah. You can dissent. You can tell your people we were against this, but ultimately, he ain't going anywhere. It's not like Texas A&M is going to jump for the ACC, right?
Okay, and I'm not going to fly the ACC flag high here because I'll tell you what I think the ACC ought to do in a minute. But
okay.
In the SEC, the trust level in that league has now gone out the door.
Sure.
Because Ray Tanner, in his office in Columbia, South Carolina, was that mean if they're going to talk to Dan, hypothetically, if they're going to talk to Dan Radakovich at Clemson, Ray?
Yes.
We'll let you know.
Well, yeah.
I mean, we'll let you know.
I mean, because what's to stop the SEC from sticking at 16? I mean, to me, this is all about the power vacuum that exists thanks to what happened to the NCAA. And
there's no question. And if people don't think that our organization is teetering on disaster, yeah. they're sadly mistaken.
So if you're Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the SEC, in the position of power that you're in, right, in the sport that makes the most amount of football and you're as dominant as you are, and you just got all this money with this new television deal with ESPN and the like, why would you not
– Speaking of people that knew things and didn't say anything.
Right. Meanwhile, but that wouldn't be the first. That's not the first time that ESPN has been privy to these types of things. I mean, the ACC
that's
is included
correct,
in this. That's TV
absolutely.
Being TV. I got no problems with that. My point is, if you're Greg Sankey, you look across the landscape. What do you see? You see a transition in power from John Swofford to Jim Phillips.
Sure.
Take advantage. Look, I think most people understand that I have the utmost respect for John Swofford. But I don't think that Swofford in the last 6 months on the job was necessarily, you know, keeping an eye out for these types of things, if you catch my drift, as they were transitioning to Jim Phillips. They have an ineffective commissioner in the Big Ten, as you mentioned. After years of Delaney, here was a guy that was going to get dunked on by Big Ten presidents and ADs. And then you got a power influx that's happening in the Pac-12 with a guy who has no real skin in the game. He's coming from Vegas. If you're Sankey, you look across, and we all know Bob Bowlsby, the commissioner of the Big 12, is just kind of like a wallflower. So here's this opportunity to take advantage of this power void and really make your mark about what's next and where things are headed. And that's why if I'm the ACC, I just kind of gave a little knock to John Swofford. I understand that the ESPN deal that the ACC signed not that long ago, people have used the term albatross. You know, it doesn't actually financially close the gap, et cetera, et cetera. I understand all those things. However, the one thing that that deal did do with the new grant of rights with ESPN that runs all the way through 2036, it makes it incredibly difficult for Sankey to try and go pluck Clemson next. And that's the only thing that's saving the ACC's ass right now is a contract that not a lot of people like, but makes it really cost prohibitive to do this in the next 10 years. But if you're the ACC, you got to make sure that in the next 10 years, you're not getting poached. But that's the problem. What does the ACC do? Because really, there's only one team of value that can do anything, and that's Notre Dame.
Correct. And you've got a 15-year lien on Notre Dame as a property.
Yeah.
Okay? So Notre Dame can't really go anywhere, you know, now unless they've got an inordinate amount of money, which they do, I guess. But to me, the ACC stands pat and lets Oklahoma and Texas go to the SEC, but it doesn't mean that ACC stands pat all the way.
Yeah.
I think at some point you have to look at what the ACC has more major television markets than any other conference in the country. That's number one. They have more top 50 television markets than any other conference in the country. That's an important aspect about where they are right now. The second thing is you've got revenue streams that you need to continue to turn the spigot on for. And you need to do that. And those won't make up what could potentially be the gap. Here's the other side of this, too. People are going to go, and look, I feel for people who think that Texas and Oklahoma – and by the way, I, for the life of me, still having a hard time figuring out why Oklahoma's doing this because they've got an easier path to the CFP than the one they're getting ready to get into.
Mm.
You know? I mean, they've gotten to the Final Four by winning their league. Now you're going to go into a league where you're probably going to be put in a pod, I don't know, probably with Alabama and LSU or something like that. They're going to go to pods, by the way, in the SEC is what I'm hearing. And if they do, they'll play everybody in their pod plus – another pod, and then one of each of the other ones. The idea being that Oklahoma's giving up the easy path to the college football playoff that they've had where they really only got to win one or two games a year in order to get there. But I think the Southeastern Conference certainly is going to have their speak at the well on the money side, and that's fine. I just don't know if the harmony and synergy is there by the way this has all happened. What's the trust level going to be, I guess, is the end game.
No, I'm with you on that. West Durham, ACC Network. You can catch Packer and Durham on Buzz Sports Radio starting at 10 weekday mornings. Wes, it's good to talk to you again.
Yes, Wes.
Pleasure.
Glad you're back with us on a Wednesday.
Chilio, not happy at all with me.
No, I'm happy. Yeah.
Okay, all good.
I'm over that you left us for the summer. Like, we went out and got Abby Labar to fill in for you. So, you know, you got to be careful a little bit there.
See what happened to Abby? She comes in, fills in, and all of a sudden she's getting married.
Right.
I know. Good things happen.
Is there show karma? Is that a thing? All right, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Be good.
NFL training camp underway, and Aaron Rodgers showed up at camp yesterday with, like, Oakley sunglasses, some office T-shirt. He had the internet blowing up yesterday because he showed up after they knocked out some sort of arrangement with the Green Bay Packers. And he met with the media today, and he just aired it out, man. He's like, I'm here, but just so you know, I'm not really feeling the Green Bay Packers. And when he was asked about whether or not he was actually considering retirement, he backed it up by saying, yeah, it's definitely something I thought about.
Yeah, it was definitely something I thought about. I talked about how important being a full-timer was for a long time. This was the first time to spend the off-season away without a COVID year or a lockout year. And I enjoyed it. You know, I really did. I took time working on myself and trying to better myself in a number of areas where I feel like I could improve based on my own patterns and conditioning. And it was a lot of growth in that process. I continued to find joy and happiness in things off the field. However, there's still a big competitive hole in my body that I need to fill. And as I got back into my workouts, I just realized that I know I can still play, and I want to still play. And as long as I feel like I can give 100% to the team, then I should still play.
So that's Aaron Rodgers addressing the media today at the start of Packers training camp. And then he got into his problems with the Green Bay Packers. You remember, this has nothing to do with money. It has ultimately to do with respect. And we have yet another example of a quarterback who wants more input with free agent decisions. And Aaron Rodgers said he tried to give his input involving free agents, but he was ignored by the front office.
And then it kind of progressed from there into a commitment for the 2021 season and beyond. That really wasn't given at any time. So for me, I had to assess the situation. Not necessarily wanting to be a lame duck quarterback, especially after an MVP season, which I think you can understand. And then the other part in February was wanting to be a part of conversations involving free agents, which has never happened in my career. You know, I've trained with a number of NFL guys most of my career in the off seasons. My agency at the first has had a number of high draft picks over the years. I've tried to pass along information. Hasn't really been used, shall we say. So I wanted to offer up my services as a recruiter, you know. And I think we can all understand, you know.
You want to talk about how Green Bay is not exactly like a vacation destination. That's Aaron Rodgers. So it's, you know,
people were going there to play with him.
That's all it was. People were there to go play with him, not, you know, the history of the Packers or any of that stuff, or Green Bay being a vacation destination. They were there to go play with him. Essentially what he's saying there, what Aaron Rodgers is saying there is, Tom Brady went to Tampa and people wanted to play with him.
Okay.
And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers went and got guys that were friends with Tom Brady, like Rob Gronkowski. They even kicked the tires in Antonio Brown, like all that kind of stuff, right? Meanwhile, the Packers are doing what the Packers have always done. You know, we did this to Brett Favre, too. What makes you think that you're special and that we're going to listen to you? And this happens to quarterbacks all the time, where they are there long enough, they have success, well, they've won a Super Bowl or two, and then suddenly they feel like they've got a say in front office decisions.
Let me ask you this, though.
Yeah.
When's the last time Aaron Rodgers took less money so that the Packers could sign other players or keep those all-pro offensive linemen? Because consistently throughout his career, mm-hmm. Tom Brady left money on the table mm-hmm. so that the team he was playing for mm-hmm. could sign other pieces to go around him.
Yeah.
Has Aaron Rodgers done that at all in his career?
If he has, it has not been often. It has not been at the rate that Tom Brady has. I don't have the contracts in front of me, but I'm pretty sure that Aaron Rodgers has not done that sort of thing. No.
Okay.
So,
if you don't understand mm-hmm. why Brady has been successful, then you're never going to get it for your team. That's as simple as it gets. You could sit here and hope and wish that people will sign with your team in a quote, not a vacation destination. Mm-hmm. But if you don't give the team the salary cap flexibility to make the moves, which Tom Brady has done, well then, walk the walk. Don't just talk the talk.
2 points to this. I was actually okay with what Aaron Rodgers was saying today. I mean, if that's how you feel, if you want to be candid about the situation, I appreciate that. I truly do. That's all I ever ask. Be candid about the situation. I might not agree with what you're getting at. I might point out some of those inconsistencies like you just did, Julio, regarding free agency and money and everything else. But at least you're being upfront about it. He got rid of the passive-aggressive stuff. With the exception of one thing, he basically said that, well, you know, the media made a big deal out of nothing. No, Rodgers, no. This was all strategically done by you. You fed it. You enjoyed it. And we got 3 months of content out of it. Don't act like all the things that you just talked about weren't reported in the last 3 months. Because he did confirm what most of the reports were saying. And then this idea that, well, you guys were making a big deal out of nothing. Nah, dude. All your passive-aggressive comments were done by design to get people talking. So you can spare me that. The other thing, okay, cool. You got problems with the Packers. Got it. But you're playing this year, right? And there's some uncertainty as to what's going to happen the following season and everything else. Am I to believe that Aaron Rodgers is going to tank this year? No. Yeah. Aaron Rodgers is going to go out there and try to win a Super Bowl.
Say, why would he tank?
He wouldn't tank. That's my point. So Aaron Rodgers could sit here and light up the Packers all he wants, and the Packers can sit here and go, okay, cool, Aaron, are you done? All right, cool, go win some football games. He's out here. If this is the move, I'm going to go out, I'm going to win a Super Bowl, and I'm going to show them. Who are you showing? Yeah, you see, it was me. And the Packers are going, cool, guess where the trophy stays when you leave? That silver thing hangs out in our trophy case, man. You still won that Super Bowl with us. It goes in our record book. So if you want to win something out of spite, hey, man, we'll take it. Channel that. I mean, I don't want to go Star Wars on you here, but that's some, like, Emperor Palpatine level. Yeah. Yeah, Aaron. Let the hate flow through you. Give in to your anger. And then go win me a Super Bowl. Yes. Good. Good. I mean, that's what Aaron Rodgers is doing right now. But I forgot, he's smarter than everybody else. Carolina Panthers opened up training camp today in Wofford. Casey Hintz from WRAL TV is there. She joins us now on the Heiser Automotive Group hotline. Casey, what's up?
Oh, hey. Hello. How are you guys?
Good. So camp has opened up. Everybody's moved into their dorms. I guess everybody's talking about their camp essentials, right? They needed a blanket and a book, maybe a TV, a game system. That's what we got going on today?
Well, that was actually yesterday.
Was that yesterday? My bad.
Yes, yes. No, that's okay. Yeah, they're all moved in and actually started practicing today and this morning. But it was obviously, you know, no big fireworks or anything, as Matt Rhule called it, an acclimation period. So, you know, just his one day at a time mantra, and actually use the words, they're not competitive on day one, but I don't know. I thought it was good. I was, you know, where it's all set up this year, it was, you know, you're so far back still as far as kind of where you're shooting and whatnot. So kind of really hard to get a good look in certain areas, but yeah, I was stationed on the defensive side, got a real good look at, you know, their first rounder in JC Horn. That dude, it's too early, but he's a baller, so he was fun to watch. He's, you know, of course, obviously coming from an NFL dad, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so it's good out here. A little too hot.
Well, yeah, well, it is the armpit of South Carolina in terms of how weather works there in Spartanburg. I mean, and look, I've been to Spartanburg. It's a fine town. Don't get me wrong. It's just geography wise and climate wise, man, it gets freaking hot, man. Although it's funny. I think to me the story of camp is going to be Sam Darnold and how he looks as we get eventually to some preseason games, because there's a lot of expectations the way they've kind of built him up and how they believe they can win with him after we haven't really seen much from the Jets. So I cannot wait for camp updates about how just Sam Darnold's slinging it. Very excited about that.
Yeah, today there wasn't much slinging going on.
Yeah.
Of course, but I guess, you know, from what, once I got back over onto that side, you couldn't shoot that anymore, but you could watch a little bit, and he looked okay. You know, Matt Rhule saying for him the biggest thing is, you know, worrying about football stuff, not worrying about being a leader of this team. He doesn't even want them to focus on that. So that's kind of been, you know, that's what he wants everyone to focus on too, is less about wanting Darnold to be the leader, more so, you know, obviously trying to just be a starting quarterback here and prove that. So
was NFL training camp everything you dreamed of as a young journalist, Casey? Did it live up to all of your hopes and fantasies?
Don't. It was so hot carrying all the equipment and there was bugs everywhere. No.
I saw your tweet about the bugs.
I'm just dead. I'm just trying to stay alive. And then I see people are posting photos and you can see me in the background. And I look as good as I felt. I'm like, man.
All right, Casey. We'll check in with you later this week.
Sounds good.
Bye, Casey.
Bye.
WRAL. Out in Spartanburg for training camp. Next up.
Number three.
Well, Joe. I liked George Kliavkov before I knew anything about the Pac-12 commissioner, just because of his background in gambling and MGM Grand. But now that I've read his quotes in the Athletic article by Nicole Auerbach and Stuart Mandel about, hey, now, wait a second. How did these four guys end up on a committee, a subcommittee together? And two of them in particular ended up being the really big winners of playoff expansion?
Yeah.
Kliavkov said, listen,
This is not a decision that should have been made by just, you know, four people, and specifically two in SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey and Notre Dame Athletic Director Jack Swarbrick. College football expansion, which they're talking about, college football playoff expansion, which they're talking about going to 12 teams, he said, should be one decided by representation from, wait a second now, the Pac-12, the Big Ten, and the ACC, who weren't in it. None of those three conferences had a say in what's going on. And now there is at least some talk that those leagues could try to slow this expansion down now that they know it was based on insider information.
The only thing that can come out of this that would benefit the ACC is if they start to reassess how you get into the college football playoff.
Okay.
Conference, meaning? Like, you know, basically squeezing conference champions in. Or if you say you have to play a certain amount of conference games to qualify or whatever it is. I've never understood why Notre Dame continues to get included in these types of things, because they are the outlier in how college football is headed. Why do we keep inviting them to the party? I hate to break this to Notre Dame fans, but much like the Rose Bowl, this thing can continue without you, okay? Like, and when that happens, it's almost like...
Well, it can, but if their AD is the one pulling the strings, well...
There's an ancient American proverb. Mess around and find out. Okay? Like, that's my attitude with Notre Dame. Oh, you want to stay independent, and you don't want to sign off on this college football playoff stuff. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to make it so that in order to qualify for this particular thing, you have to play X amount of conference games, or you have to be in a conference. Just straight up say, you have to be in a conference. And Notre Dame's going to go, no. We value our independence. All right, mess around and find out. That's the edited version. And what they'll come to find out is life will move on without them. And I wish other college commissioners and ADs would understand this. But I guess you talked about how yesterday or the other day you had mentioned how Jack Swarbrick, the AD at Notre Dame, is like the Kaiser Soze, you know, going on here, you know, pulling the strings behind the scenes, and nobody knew that he was manifesting all this to be true. It could just be that Notre Dame actually has the smartest strategy. There is no Kaiser Soze. It's when you populate every freaking AD office, well, then, yeah, of course you're going to think about Notre Dame in a different way. So maybe stop hiring Notre Dame products.
Maybe you showed respect by showing no respect.
There we go.
Yeah.
It's time for Rant 2.
Acapella the news.
Yeah, as you said, Ovi, it's kind of a bittersweet day. We're excited to get some new players in, but also, you know, you lose some guys like Warren Fogile and Brock McGinn. And so it just made me think of one song and one song only. Just come back, guys.
Oh, jeez.
Getting emotional this week.
Spending all my nights, all my money, going out on the market. Doing anything just to bring the cup back home. But when the day began, all these offers started coming through the door. Then suddenly PNC felt so alone. Baby, come back. Any Kaniac could see. You were something, and you know it, never doubt you. Baby, come back. Don't worry about your AAV. Stay where you belong,
like,
cause
that.
We just
like
can't
that.
Play without you.
I told Julio, you know how I like to go falsetto? I tried to harmonize it.
Yeah.
Shout out to Player, because... That's some tight harmony, man. I couldn't
bet.
Touch that.
I Shout bet. Out to- Shout out to Player.
You've been listening to the Best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting Joe O to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 6 p.m., and you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.